And I've known this church kind of for a while. In 2010, Stacy had Skyped with us when we were in Taiwan, and at that time, Sam was only like 2 or 3 years old, and I think our twins had either been just born or were on the way. I forget where they were. And Chester Brook, I visited you all in 2012, I think, the last time we were through. So it's fun to be here. My wife has an aunt in D.C. I have an aunt and uncle in Annapolis, and then Emily had worked in Silver Spring for a couple of years. So this feels, it's like one of our homes. And you heard Eli earlier. He is our loudest child and also has the most trouble adjusting to new environments. So thank you all for welcoming us as a whole family. Let me get myself a little bit together here. So today I'm going to talk a little bit about the idea of teachers. Let me first introduce myself a little bit more. So I was born in Congo and left. My parents were mission workers there, and I left when I was 2 years old. But I was always kind of interested in world Christianity. Maybe if you're a pastor's kid, often you get to meet missionaries when they come through, and you get to hear about the church in different places. And then people often kind of want to know, like, why do you come here and speak in bad Chinese for one service and then come to another service, and how did you get into this whole thing? And my background was in high school. I was like an okay French student, and I tested out of one semester in college. And then I took one more semester, and it turned out if you took 1 year of French, you could apply for a program where you could study another language. So then I spent one summer in Michigan studying Chinese, and it was like really, really hard, but I kept with it for a while. And then I went to Beijing for a year. So in Beijing, my Chinese name was, I don't think it's on there, but it was Song Qiang. They took sites and turned it into Song, and Jonathan and turned it into Qiang. And I found out later on that Chang means strong, but sometimes it also means a little fat, so I'm not sure about how I feel about that. And then we did some other stuff. During seminary, I spent a summer in Ghana, and then my roommate or my next-door neighbor and family housing in seminary went back and taught in Taiwan. So during grad study, I went to Taiwan for a year, and Emily left New Jersey in February to come visit for like a semester, and New Jersey was like cold and ugly and horrible, and she went to Taipei and it was really beautiful. And that was part of our call to Taiwan, is that we sort of fell in love with Taiwan. And in Taiwan, I have a new Chinese name. It's they took sites and turned it into Tsai, which is a really common name. Are there any Tsais here? Probably at least a couple, right? That's good. So same family. How about any, are there any songs? Are there any songs here? Song, I didn't know, is kind of like a Kuomintang name or something. So it's a little bit, so it's good. I think they changed it intentionally when I went to Taiwan. And then Jonathan, you're not Don. Like Jonathan, in English, you shorten it to John, stuff like Johnny, you know, things like that. But in Chinese, Jonathan gets shortened into Jonah. So I thought that was kind of cool. Like you're not Don becomes you're not. And Yuana is like the really bad missionary, but God uses him. So that's kind of the background. And then this picture, I don't know if my kids have actually seen these pictures, but the top one is Samuel in his school when he was in like kindergarten. And then the bottom picture is Eli and Eva being baptized. And for me, it was really cool that they were like baptized in Taiwanese, which is a language I don't speak and they don't speak. And I had also been baptized in Chiluba, which is a language I don't speak. But it's a reminder that I really believe God loves the whole world and God can speak to each of us in our own language. Okay, so today I'm gonna talk a little bit about teachers. And like one of the first words you learn when you're learning Chinese is you learn that word for teacher. Probably you guys all know that. How do you say teacher? Baoshi, right? And how do you say it does anybody know the Taiwanese? I don't know a lot of Taiwanese, but I also learned the word for teacher in Taiwanese because it's, you have to talk to your teacher, right? So who knows teacher in Taiwanese? Is it like Lao Su or something? Lao Su, is it?
That's Chinese, but more like Taiwanese accent.
Oh, is it? How? Lao Su, something. I think it's something. I think it's. Well, I would say Lao Su, and they would answer to it. So the So teacher is kind of like, I think there is a little bit of a cultural difference. I mean, in English, we have the description of a teacher. Like you might say, you know, the pastor teaches Bible, or this is my teacher, you know, Mrs. Miller, or this is, we have like maybe the word professor is a little similar where you have a title you call someone. But one of the things I thought was really cool in Taiwan is that anybody that teaches is a teacher. And it's a position of like of great respect. So my children very early on learned that they had like a Yen Lao Sir and a Ye Lao Sir and a Hong Lao Sir and a Chen Lao Sir. They had all these different teachers. And that to the teacher was somebody you had to listen to. Like you don't necessarily have to listen to the other people, but you have to listen to Lao Sir, right? Is that mostly, that's mostly true, I think. For me, it was a way of learning about like what matters. It was also interesting with the first congregation, I asked them, what do you say to your kids when you drop them off at school? And they pretty much said the same answer. So what do your parents say to you when they drop you off at school? What do they say? Behave. Yeah, that's good. That's good. That's anything else? Sometimes listen to your teacher. So in Chinese, it was the ones we'd hear where they say to Samuel's classmates were like, Yao Hong Guai. And the other one was listen to your teacher, kind of, probably. Teachers are people that we treat often with a lot of respect. And my guess is most of you will teach in some form in your life. Like when I'm in churches, basically everybody is a teacher. You teach Sunday school or nursery school. You teach Bible studies. You teach in other ways. It's part of our training for ministry and life. So this is the school Sam goes to. This is a picture of him. And the earlier picture, I'm skipping around too much. The earlier picture, that's them at Sunday school. So that was Sam's, Eva and Eli with their Sunday school teachers. Okay. So today's passage is a very famous passage in Luke called from the Sermon on the Plains. And you've probably heard the Sermon on the Mount before that has the Beatitudes in it, and it's this big section in Matthew. In today's reading, it's Jesus has this very short sermon, but it's piled full of deep advice. So when I picked the passage today, I didn't sort of know where to stop and when to end because it's full of little tiny pieces of wisdom, pieces of teaching that could become the whole sermon, right? So Jesus has, in today's passage, he tells his followers to be cautious of judging and condemning. He tells them to give as they wish to receive. He asks them to be humble as students. And it concludes with this famous passage about taking the log out of your own eye before you take the speck out of your neighbor's eye. And it's a passage that I really like a lot. And one of the things that it made me think about a lot is like, what does it mean to be a teacher, or who is Jesus's teacher? So there's a scholar I read a few years ago, David Bosch, and he talks a lot about the relationship between the student and the teacher, or the disciple and the teacher. And he says that in most religious traditions, if you're a disciple, your goal is eventually to become the teacher. Or that a lot of times if you go to school, your role as a student is eventually to kind of replace the teacher. So in his day, if he was a rabbi and he was teaching students, often their goal was also to become rabbis. Or in a lot of traditions, like even for us as Christians, you know, you can go to school and learn how to be a pastor, which is a type of teacher also. But what David Bosch said is he said, with Christians, it's a little bit different because you're not training to replace the teacher, you're kind of training to become a better disciple or a better student, that we want to be like the teacher. Like I really like that line today in the Sermon on the Plains about being like the teacher, that part of our goal in life is to follow Jesus all of our days, and that's kind of different than other types of study we do. So I think that's true of the church also. Like the type of studying you do here probably is different than the type of studying you do in other places. But at school, you often have these concrete class structures, these pieces of knowledge that you're supposed to learn. But here in church, we also want you to grow up to be really a faithful disciple. That's like the main the main goal of our being here. In Chinese, there was a proverb I learned or that they would often say to us in school, the huo dao lao, xue dao lao, kind of like, as long as you live, you should keep studying. And I think that that's also true for us as Christians, that the life of being a disciple is being a Christian all of our days. And my hope is that for mission, that we also kind of follow this understanding, that in the reading today, it talks about how our goal is to see our own flaws as clearly as we see others, and to be as generous to others as we want them to be generous to us, that we want to seek first to learn and then to teach later on. And I hope that in mission we have this goal also, that we're not just going out to show people their flaws. It's not the blind leading the blind. Hopefully we're really doing what Jesus wants us to do, which is to follow him and to learn from him all of the days of our lives. And I like that image of Jesus as teacher, that's one of the titles given to him in the Bible as rabbi. And my guess is it's kind of like Lao Shi. Like with Lao Shi, you don't even have to know the teacher's name. You can just call them, you know, Lao Shi, can you help me with this? Lao Shi, can you help me with that? Same with rabbi, that Jesus, people would often come up to him and say, rabbi, you know, I have this question, can you help me? And that Jesus is still our teacher. He's still somebody we can go to and we can learn from kind of all of our days. Okay. So especially while we're back, we're sharing a lot about our work in Taiwan. And just before we came back in February, we went to a big retreat in the Philippines. And I didn't know it, but the Philippines has a big group of Presbyterians there. We were in an island called Dumaguete. And they brought mission workers from all throughout Asia to this one island. And the goal was to kind of give us time to learn and reflect. And with my job, with that cross-cultural life, I'm always trying to figure out, like, how do you do this? So it was really fun. I got to meet people from all over the world doing really interesting missions. So there's a couple that's been in Pakistan for 30 years, and they're doctors there, and they work with the very poor, and they also partner with local churches. And I also met, we have a new coordinator that works in Philippines working on human trafficking issues, that we know in the world there are lots of different types of immigration, and in the U.S. and Taiwan and Southeast Asia, that's often a concern, is how are people treated, and how does the church respond, how does the church help our people as they cross borders and live in different places. I also met a man who's been teaching in Japan for like 20 years at a university there. And then I slowly found that there were a lot of other teachers also, that a big part of mission work has often been teaching. The old line used to be preach, teach, heal, that was the types of mission work that people did, as we did preaching, teaching, and healing. And in some ways, that's still true. So among the mission workers, there was English teacher in Japan. There was a pastor that teaches like leaders in rural Thailand, that he goes around to where the church leaders are and works on leadership development and pastor training. We have a couple that teaches in Indonesia. Indonesia is the largest Muslim country in the world, but it also has a couple of million Presbyterians there. And so for me, it was really fun to just see like what is teaching like in different places, and how do they connect to students? How do you become a better teacher? And so I've sort of taken to thinking of this as kind of an invisible seminary, that if you look at where our mission workers are around all around the world, they often have a lot to offer in the way they learn about things. Another thing I should mention, especially to you all, is at the gathering, there were four young adult volunteers who were people who had volunteered for like a year after undergrad to go teach. You could do either work in the U.S. doing volunteer work or work abroad. And I know parents like sometimes are kind of nervous about kids doing volunteer work, but it's another way to do mission and to learn about mission. Emily had done a volunteer year with Jesuit Volunteer Corps in Atlanta after undergrad, and I think for her it was like life-changing also. So sometimes when you get out of your own context and you're in another place, you can see the church, you can see the world in totally new ways. So my denomination, like the PCUSA, the big church we belong to, Its world mission has kind of three focuses that we have right now. One is witness and evangelism and teaching. One is addressing the root causes of poverty, and one is seeking reconciliation in cultures of violence. So those are also areas where mission work takes place. So like I had one coworker I just found out this last week was evacuated from South Sudan. South Sudan is a new country in the world. It used to be just be part of Sudan, where I think in Sudan the north was Muslim and the south was Christian, and now it's split into kind of two countries. And it's an area where it doesn't get much attention, right? Like it doesn't get a lot of news coverage often. It's hard to emigrate from South Sudan, but the church is still there and the church cares about people there. So it's, I admire my coworkers from all of these different places, and you can imagine that people are all around the world. Our main work in Taiwan for the last 7 years has been to work on training pastors for the church in Taiwan, that there are, I think, about 1,200 Presbyterian churches in Taiwan, and it's mostly kind of family-sized churches. Like Chesterbrook is, this congregation is larger than most of the congregations I think my students serve in, that it's, the Taiwanese church has churches all throughout the south and in the cities. And there are three places where people go to train to be pastors, and one of them is in Taipei. So I teach at the seminary in Taipei, and if you want to be a pastor, like Reverend Young Park or other people, you have to study Bible, history, theology, and some kind of church ministry are kind of the four big areas most people study in. My students have to take Hebrew and Greek. I always feel bad for students that have to study Greek and Hebrew in Mandarin. That seems somehow unfair to me, but the flip side of it is we produce really incredible teachers sometimes. So there's a new Hakka Bible that's been translated. There's a new Taiwanese Bible. I think the New Testament's out, and they're working on the Old Testament. And there are often new study Bibles that often is, for Christians, we kind of take for granted that you can go on Amazon and you can find 5,000 books that relate to what you're interested in, but in a lot of parts of the world, Christians still just kind of need basic resources. And my students, I always admire their work ethic, that they work really hard. So this last year I had a student where it was her last year of seminary, and she'd been placed in a small church without a pastor. So she was preaching almost every Sunday. And in my seminary, they make you do a senior sermon, so you have to preach a sermon, and then you're critiqued by all the teachers and classmates. So she was getting ready for that. And then her father got very sick. And I didn't know it at the time, but her father was a non-Christian and it was kind of a tough family to grow up in. Like, she was one of three daughters, and the father had kind of always wanted a son. But even in the middle of that, like, I really admired this young woman who was a student and was working hard. And then when her family needed help, she kind of showed up. And her father was baptized, and it was amazing for me to see how, just in that intensity of life, you know, with sickness and studies, with all the rest of it going on, how God was using her. So another joy for me, kind of having, now I've been back and forth to Taiwan for 10 years, is some of the students I had 10 years ago now are coming back as teachers, and that's been really fun. So we have a new education teacher is going to start in the fall, who I met 10 years ago. And it's a small part of the work, but it's still work that I think is important. For this congregation, I wanted you all to think about kind of ways that you can be involved in mission, and that ways that you think God might be calling your fellowship to be part of the broader church in the world. It was fun. Yesterday I met with one of the fellowship groups from this church. I think it was the Jacob Fellowship, or what was it called? Ija. Who's Ija? I should know that.
Low family.
Okay. So I went the fellowship group, and one of the things they were talking about is, like, how do we do mission, and what areas of mission are we interested in being involved in? And with congregations, I often tell them to look at sort of three areas that they can look at. The mission in their back door, mission next door to them. I encourage them to look at Presbyterians kind of around the world, Christians around the world, mission. they can do in the broader world, and then also ways that they can be involved in some of the work by Presbyterian Church of Taiwan or PCUSA throughout the world. This fellowship is kind of a fun one for me. I grew up in like an Anglo church, and an Anglo church's youth group was pretty much like ages 13 to 18. And then I went to Taiwan and I figured out that like Nianqing Ren is, what ages would you put on it for youth? What is a youth or English? This is not just youth, I know it's like all English fellowship, but it's often ages like 10 to 40, I would say. Like it's like this big stretch. And there are ways that you all can be involved in mission in your own backyard, and you probably are, and I may not know it yet. I was like a youth director for 5 years, and I remember once somebody told me, it was a youth pastor told me, youth spend more time with their friends than with anyone else. Like, you guys spend more time together with people your own age than you do with anyone else. And your ability to have an influence is really, really big. So I think often we sort of think as like youth as the future of mission or the future of the church, but really you're the reality of the church right now, that God has a plan for you here and now. And so think about how God can use you in mission today. If there are ways in your community, in your church, in this area. One of the things, being back in Ohio, I've been kind of surprised how if I travel 10 miles, I go from city to suburbs to country, and they're three totally different worlds. And you guys probably travel between some of those worlds also. So think about how God is calling you to mission here where you are. I love the diversity of the U.S. When I talk to other congregations, I've often been telling them that our first Sunday back in February was a really fun one for me because it was Super Bowl Sunday, but it was also Chinese New Year. I don't know. Do any of you remember that? Did you guys do both? Did you do Chinese New Year and Super Bowl the same Sunday or different Sundays? What did you guys do? Did you do any of that? Anyways, there was this Baptist church nearby. Like, I didn't know the community real well, but I saw that there was a Baptist church that was having a Chinese New Year's party, and it was in a Chinese school run by Taiwanese in Cincinnati. And I remember I took Sam and Eli to the church, and it was like the most amazing food because it was the really good Taiwanese food, and then it was all the really bad for you American food, like pizza and nachos and everything else. And I just remember thinking that felt a little bit like God's kingdom, to have all those different things together. And then everything wrapped up at 6 o'clock and people went home and watched the Super Bowl, I think was the way it worked. But for when I visit most churches, they're kind of unaware. Like, there's a Mormon church down the street, and there's a Korean church, you know, a few other way, and there are charismatic or Pentecostal churches right next door. But often on Sunday morning, we lose sight of the fact that God has a mission for us. Maybe the event yesterday sounds like it was like that. Christians from all different parts of D.C. all coming together is really wonderful. So secondly, I encourage you to like look to the broader world church also. That people say that the biggest shift that happened in the 20th century was probably the shift, one of the biggest shifts was in how Christianity moved. The Christianity, if you look in 1900, it was still mostly a European-American religion, but by the year 2000, there were large Christian populations in Nigeria and Congo and Korea and Philippines and Brazil and in other areas, that the world church is a church that has shifted the way we do church today. And a few years ago, I heard this saying I've been repeating, that there are more Presbyterians in Korea than Scots in Scotland. You know, like Scotland is sort of the church where Presbyterians came from. It's only a few million people, but in Korea today, there are more Presbyterians than there are all of Scots in all of Scotland. Or sometimes people say mission is from everywhere to everywhere. And I think you're blessed in a way to be part of a congregation that crosses generations and crosses cultures already. But my prayer for you is that just as I knew that there was a place called Congo and there were Christians there, my prayer for you is that you'll also know that there's a church that stretches over the whole world and that you can have a role in it. And I think you have probably in this congregation there are people with gifts who could do wonderful mission in so many different ways. It was fun to talk to Elder Max yesterday, and he talked about the church in Myanmar, that Taiwanese have been a big help, especially to Chinese-speaking minorities in Myanmar. And we have two graduates in my seminary in Myanmar now also. And 10 years ago, nobody would ever have guessed this was possible, but in today's world, things really are changing. And last, I want to thank you for your connection to PCUSA World Mission, to our denomination's World Mission. You've always been a friend and like a look kind of cared for us, which I appreciate. This is only the second time we've come to this church, but I still remember the last time I was back, the pastor's wife kind of took Samuel aside and talked to him and played with him. And I've been grateful for the ways that this is a church that crosses cultures and can do that. And you also support a coworker of mine, John McCall. He was my predecessor and has been in Taiwan for 20 years, and he does just really amazing stuff. The Presbyterians in Taiwan that have come from the U.S., our main areas have been kind of campus ministry, Aborigine work, and then ministry training. And John works in all of those areas. So I saw you put up his prayer letters out there if you want to read it sometime. But mostly I want to say thank you all for that. And my hope is that we can stay connected, that maybe we could Skype together again sometime, or that we'll be back in a couple years and see you again. So one of the things that I like about Taiwanese sermons is they usually conclude with a prayer. I went to a lot of churches where the pastor just said, they said, and now we'll sing a hymn or something, but I like the concluding prayer. So let's say a concluding prayer together. Jesus, our Lord and our teacher, we thank you for the work you do in the world. We thank you for your mission here, throughout this corner of Virginia, and in the great wide world. Lord, help us to follow your teachings, to forgive as you call us to forgive, to give as you call us to give, and to teach what you have given us to teach. We pray this in your name. Amen.
Let us respond to the word of God with offering.